School shooters, for the most, share three things in common. Each has a gun, each has a history of psychotropic medication, and each has realized his or her homicidal ideation. And so today we pause to ask, which feeds homicidal ideation, guns or meds?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,140th edition of the Food Chain, right here on the GCN Radio Network, or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Valparaiso, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Griffin Queener and the controls here at Broadcast Central. Folks, a confession. Way back there in second grade, I was simply unmanageable. And so the school administrators held me back a year, with the thought being the second time around the second grade, maybe I would become manageable or face the prospect of spending the rest of my life in second grade. So I became manageable, at least sort of. I don't think school administrators do that anymore. I think what they do now is drug the unmanageable into submission and call it a day. But you know, those drugs don't end at the end of the administrator's day. They just keep right on coming, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. According to the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, 36 of the recent perpetrators of school shootings or related acts of violence shared three things in common. Each had a weapon, each had a history of psychotropic medication, and each had a homicidal ideation. These commonalities lead us to ask, which feeds homicidal ideation? Something's got to feed it. What is it? Is it the weapon or is it the meds? Here to help us hunt down an answer, we have David Kupelian. Did I get it right?
Kupelian.
I did go wrong. David Kupelian, who is a managing editor of WorldNet Daily and author of The Snapping of the American Mind. Welcome to the Food Chain, David. I really appreciate your joining us today. I know you're a very busy man, so we'll hop to it right away here. First of all, WorldNet Daily. Tell us a little bit about your news service there.
Well, I've been a journalist for 35 years, but the last almost 20 years with WorldNet Daily, which is really the oldest independent online news source in the country. 20 years is like a millennium for the internet, it's just one of the very, very large and highly trafficked news websites, general national, international news, and is very popular. Millions of people come to it every day, and I'm the managing editor there, and I deal with a whole bunch of really talented journalists, many of whom are refugees from the so-called mainstream media that just couldn't handle that insanity anymore, and so that's my day job. And then, like many journalists, I'm an author, and I've written several books. And the last two books that I've written, How Evil Works and the one you mentioned, The Snapping of the American Mind, have both had sections on this issue of psychiatric medications, and really the very double-edged sword that you're talking about. Because, in fact, you know, Michael, if I can just pick up on something you said. You're talking about, is it guns or is it the drugs? And I think everybody knows it's not quite that cut and dried. But for all the stress we hear now about guns since the Parkland, Florida shooting last week, I think we can all agree there's a good and bad side to guns. I don't want my military fighting ISIS without guns. I don't want police not to have guns. And I don't want individual citizens who are law-abiding not to be able to protect themselves. But there's a horrendous amount of crime and mayhem that's perpetrated with guns. So without even getting into, like, what do we do about it, we can acknowledge there's a good and a bad side to firearms. It's not different with psychiatric drugs. we have a huge number. I mean, right now, as we talk, 1 in 4 middle-aged American women are taking SSRI antidepressant drugs.
1 in 4?
What? 23% of women 40 to 59 years of age, is according to the CDC, are taking this particular type of drug. We're talking about, you know, SSRI modern antidepressants.
Let me see if I can get that. It's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Yes.
Do you know what the heck that means?
Yeah, basically it means you're screwing around with the brain chemistry of people. There's SSRI and SNRI, which is a serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. It's all just fancy talk for saying that you are medically, you are chemically messing around with the levels of what are called neurotransmitters in a person's brain. And, you know, the human brain is like the most wonderful and complicated thing this side of the Milky Way galaxy. It is so complex and complicated, and we're, I'm afraid, a little bit like mad scientists. We discover these medications that produce a certain effect. You know, my wife has a pharmacy degree. She 5 years of pharmacy school, and she used to tell me that, you know, David, she said, that we learned that a drug has, let's say, 21 different effects, okay? And the one that they want is the one they call the effect. And the other 20 effects are called side effects. But they're all effects of the drug. And you are going in, it's kind of like, you know, rushing in where angels fear to tread, like mad scientists, and you're putting these drugs into people's bodies and into their brains that you can't possibly understand. They are a million times more complex than the most complex supercomputer that's ever been invented. And we get a certain result, and yet there's a huge downside.
And one of those would be, of course, the snapping of the American mind. And is that not what happens with all of these school shooters, is that something snaps inside them?
Well, you know, they're all a little different. They're very sad stories, and normally and rightfully there is a very thorough review of that person's life, their medication history, all the different factors that their experience in school. Typically, they were loners, to say the least. They may have had a breakup with a girlfriend. They had all kinds of problems, social misfits and so forth, from Columbine on down. But, you know, we can't solve all those problems right now, but there is a medical blind spot when it comes to these drugs. And I'm not somebody who's a radical and saying, you know, they should all be illegal. That would be like saying all guns should be illegal, okay? It's not a solution. You create, you know, when you do dumb emotional stuff, you create worse problems than
sure.
You had before. I know that there are a lot of people, there's a lot of suffering that has been mitigated. A lot of people have been helped. I would even go so far as to say they've been a lifesaver for some people, these types of medications. And they're widely used. Something like 50 million Americans. 50 million
50
Americans.
50 million Americans. That would make one-sixth of the nation then?
Yeah, are taking some type of psychotropic, you know, mind-altering, mood-altering psychiatric drug. And I'm not saying that they're all bad, they're all wrong, but like today, out of the Britain, in The Lancet, the big medical journal, there's a big, huge, broad, deep study out of Oxford saying basically that the Britons need to be prescribed a whole lot more antidepressants. There's a whole lot more depressed people, and they need to be taking these drugs. And, it just like guns, there is a downside. And let me just be real specific, okay? So you get a prescription, you go to get an antidepressant today, okay? Every antidepressant sold in the United States of America, regardless of brand, regardless of dosage, manufacturer, has a mandatory FDA, Food and Drug Administration, what's called a black box warning label on it. This is the strongest warning that the Food and Drug Administration has about any type of meds.
Kind of like a skull and crossbones.
Yeah, and what it warns is suicidality for especially people 18 through 24. And you have to ask yourself, well, in fact, I'll read you the exact wording. Here's what it says. It warns of, quote, increased risk of suicidal thinking and behavior. Excuse me, let me just pause. Suicidal behavior means trying to kill yourself. We're not talking just about thinking and thoughts and impulses. Increased risk of suicidal thinking and behavior, known as suicidality, in young adults age 18 to 24.
Okay, hold that thought, folks. We're going to take a quick break. Hey, we're talking about what the heck happens when our minds snap, as they have been in a lot of these school shooting cases. Is it the guns? Is it the medications? What is it? Right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Okay, welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about what happens when we take a few too many of the things that are supposed to make us feel good. They make a lot of people feel good, but something happens within some of us, makes us snap. Is that the primary reason the American mind snaps, David?
There are several reasons, and I basically, look, drugs is, when you're trying to treat serious mental, emotional, and perhaps spiritual problems by drugging people and masking symptoms, that's kind of asking for trouble, isn't it? If you're trying to deal with the problem, you know, it's like you've got your house is on fire and that darn smoke detector is going. You say, you know what, honey, I'm going to just turn off that smoke detector and go back to sleep. That's obviously not solving the problem. And there are a lot of factors. You know, I'm in my 60s. The country that I grew up in was very different. We didn't have these types of events. We didn't have a school shooting. We didn't have terrorism going on every week. There are a lot of things that culturally have changed. There was you could call it a sort of a traditional, some people call it a Judeo-Christian ethic, where basically there's certain values that were in the air we breathe, and they were very restraining. Basically, for instance, families tended to stay together more. Divorce was more difficult. Fatherlessness is a huge problem that everybody across the political spectrum agrees is a huge problem. If children grow up without fathers, have a very big disadvantage in many ways. There's a lot more, basically,
faith.
For instance, pardon me?
Faith. Religion.
Faith, yes. The World War II generation, we believe, everybody believed in God. They believe, it has nothing to do with whether you went to church or whatever. It was just in the culture. The Ten Commandments, the Sermon on the Mount, that was the basis for a good society and a strong family. We believed that human life was sacred. What does that mean? That means that we didn't have abortion back then. Sex was more or less sacred. It's a fallen race. People, we don't obey these laws very well. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying there was a basic standard that sex was reserved for marriage, and however imperfectly society observed that, that was the standard, and it kept a lot of bad things out of Pandora's box from hopping out.
It was kind of like the glue that held us all together.
Yes, there was a certain cultural glue that we had, because it certainly wasn't racial, it wasn't ethnic. America is the ultimate melting pot, of every type of ethnicity and value and so forth. But, well, not value. We had common values, and they were broad. They were broad values. They weren't like this particular, you have to go to this church or something, but they were certain core values that held us together. So I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and whatever problems we had, it was a pretty stable, unified, happy, prosperous country back then. And so a lot of that has gone away now. And one of the things I do, Michael, in The Snapping of the American Mind, is to connect dots and to show that a lot of the individual pathology that we see now, the opioid addictions and other addictions and the suicide rate and crime and mental illness and all these different things that we see, I tie them to larger social, political, cultural issues to say that, you know, maybe the idea that instead of like two genders, there are now 60 or 70 or 80 different genders. And for instance, I don't know if you know this, but recently there was a law passed in California, signed into law by Jerry Brown, that you can go to prison for up to a year for refusing to use the correct transgender pronoun, some of which I cannot even pronounce. These words, I don't know how you pronounce them, to refer to somebody's gender that think what you want about it, okay? You can be sympathetic or non-sympathetic toward it. Genders that never existed in all of history, in any country, religion, time zone, anywhere, from antiquity until now, and suddenly, in the last few months, we have these new genders, and you're going to jail if you don't honor and acknowledge them and use the correct pronoun. I'm just pulling out one example out of hundreds. I'm a newsman, and I'm dealing with all these things all day, every day. I'm picking one to show that is a kind of an example of the snapping we're talking about. We've sort of lost our sanity, and when kids grow up thinking there's no God, there's no right and wrong, the human life is not sacred, they naturally get, you know, dark impulses arise in their mind, and pretty soon they are anxious, they're depressed, they have some other symptom that shows up in the diagnostic and statistical manual of a psychiatrist, and if they have enough of those symptoms there, the psychiatrist or psychologist says, you need this drug in this dosage. And that is what is going on in this country. We are literally drugging. Look, you started talking about your second grade experience. Right now, there are somewhere between 6 and 9 million American children that are on Ritalin or other psychostimulant drugs. These are dangerous, little understood drugs, mostly boys. Two-thirds of them are boys, okay? 6 to 9 million children who are like you, they're 7 or 8 years old, they don't like sitting still in a chair at a desk all day long, listening to some probably boring teacher talking about something they're not that interested in. They want to get out and climb trees and kick a ball and have fun. And yeah, because they don't want to sit still, we say they're mentally ill and we give them drugs. Okay,
and
so
away we
that's
go.
A big problem.
Well, let me pick it up a little bit. So we have a school shooting. We have many school shootings. It seems like we're always having school shootings. And whenever there's an account of a school shooting, we always hear about what kind of weapon they used, but we never hear about what kind of drug the child was taking. Why is that?
Right. The dead bodies are still in. They haven't even been cleared out, and the next of kin haven't been notified, but already the cable news is breathlessly talking about exactly what kind of guns he was using and how many rounds of ammunition could fit into the clips he had and so forth. I don't know how people feel about gun control, but we did actually have an assault weapons ban in this country for 10 years, 1994 to 2004, and there was a very exhaustive federal study done to see what effect it had on the murder rate. Zero. Okay, so anybody can easily Google that. There's a lot of people have written about it. That's not my opinion. That's the fact. It was a federally mandated study. Yeah.
That assault ban weapon was encouraged by a school shooting as well, was it not?
I'm sorry, say again.
Was that ban on assault weapons the consequence of a school shooting out here in California? I think it was in Stockton.
It was. Patrick Purdy shot. He killed five people. Yes, that's what started it. And they had the hysteria. It always starts in California. And they did it. Okay, fine. I mean, sometimes we experiment. We've been experimenting since the 1960s. Let's get rid of all values. Let's pretend there's no God. Okay, and we experiment on our society, and then we find out a generation or two later when all the families are broken down and everybody's miserable. We say, okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else. So we experimented with the assault weapons ban.
And it didn't work. We're going to have to take a quick break, David, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up that notion of why nobody is talking about the drugs being used when they always talk about the weapons used. And it seems like there are two things that are always true. There's always true that they have the meds and they have the guns. So what's what? This is The Food Chain. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain Radio. Michael Olson here, and we're talking a little bit about what happens when we have been taking all of these meds, our school children. David Kopelian with WorldNet Daily and the author of The Snapping of the American Mind is with us today, and we're exploring that. The question of when there is a school shooting, we always hear from the news media about what kind of artillery was used to perpetrate the crime, but we never hear about what kind of medication was being used by the shooter. It's always the weapon, never the medication. And somehow, I think there's a correlation between the medication and the gun and the crime. David, is there a correlation there, or is it just my imagination?
Well, people love to say that correlation is not causation. Okay, it's the first thing you want. People who know nothing else about statistics like to quote that one thing. Mm-hmm. But if you have, if you go to the website SSRIstories.org, SSRIstories.org, there are over 6,000 stories from newspapers in which psych meds were linked to adverse outcomes. So there's a lot of correlation. Now, you contacted me, Michael, after I wrote an article on the day of the Parkland, Florida school shooting.
And it was titled, Media Ignoring One Crucial Factor in the Florida School Shooting.
And if people Google this, they will. It's quite a viral article. It was the top of the Drudge Report for the better part of 2 days, and hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people have read it. A lot of comments I've heard from congressmen and from law enforcement and nurses and so forth. It struck a chord because few people are writing about this. And the point of it, I do list through a bunch of school shooters that had been on these psych meds and so forth. But the key to what I was saying was that the first day of reporting, whenever these events happen, usually within a day or two, you have a relative who comes forward and says, yeah, I know he was taking these psychiatric drugs. And then you don't hear about it after that. That was certainly the case with the Newtown shooting at Sandy Hook. You had some friends of the family went on 60 Minutes and said, yes, he was taking these meds. But you can never quite nail it down. All we heard about was AR-15s and guns, and that's what happened here.
Nicholas Cruz.
Yeah, Nicholas Cruz's adoptive mother, his sister, her name was Barbara Kombatovic. She said that Nick was on medication to deal with his emotional fragility. And then I noticed that was on the day of the shooting. I noticed that on February 19th, which was Monday. There was a report on NBC News that said that mental health investigators in 2016 said that her son, the killer, suffered from ADHD, depression, and autism, but insisted that he received his necessary medication as prescribed. This is a quote. Okay, and then also said
Wait
that,
a minute,
you know...
That's very interesting. So essentially they were saying... it wasn't the cause. It was he had no excuse for
right. They're taking
taking his medication.
He was on his meds. That's the tack they're taking. But the question is, well, on your meds, off your meds. There's a big question, and the look. We just go back to the fact that all these drugs have a, this is not, you know, my opinion or your opinion. The FDA, they have this black box warning label for suicidality. Let's just stop and take a breath for a second and think. Suicidality, you're killing a human being. Yes, it's yourself, and you can argue it's horrible to say, but you can argue it's not as horrible as like going and shooting up a school of innocent classmates, okay? It's still horrible. And you're not thinking right, okay? If we want to think just in terms of good and evil, is the impulse to kill yourself coming from good or evil? Let me just do a quick religion thing here.
Sure.
It's evil.
So
if you're taking a drug, which the manufacturer, this is a mandatory warning label, says may increase suicidal thinking or behavior, okay, like shooting yourself, I think we can say that this is conjuring up something dark and evil in people. I don't think that's at all a stretch. And by the way, let's distinguish between rare adverse events, which are things that happen in less than 1 in 1,000 people taking a drug, and side effects. When they say, like, you know, when you look at Ambien, okay, which is a very common sleep aid, okay, and it says you could end up sleepwalking, sleep driving, that scares me, okay? Sleep sexing, sleep, all these different things. These are the standard things that you can anticipate may happen. They are not like, wow, this has been reported, it happened, it was horrible, it probably won't happen to you. So
it's a side effect.
Yeah, it's
There's
a side effect.
This is another thing that'll happen.
Yeah, now when this is a horrible thing, but Andrea Yates, if people listening remember, she was the Houston woman who, this is so awful, she drowned her 5 children in a bathtub many years ago. She's in a psychiatric lockup for the rest of her life, obviously now. She was taking Effexor, which is a very common antidepressant. 4 years after that crime, Effexor, Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, and this is their best-selling drug, okay, they quietly added homicidal ideation to the list of rare adverse events. Now, you know,
Where did that word come from, homicidal ideation? I mean, I've just been seeing it lately, haven't seen it before. Is this something new, or?
Well, homicidal ideation is just a sort of a
murderous thoughts, right?
Yes, murderous thoughts. Okay, if they said our drug may cause murderous thoughts, that's really bad for sales. So, but they didn't really publicize it. It was quietly added to the list of rare adverse events. I feel like, Michael, I want to jump in and say that not everybody that takes these drugs becomes a murderer. You asked, well, why is it there's such a failure to, a lack of interest, a failure to report on these things? Part of it is the drug companies don't want the bad publicity, but, you know, part of it, Michael, people are offended. I love people, okay? I'm a Christian man. I honestly can say I don't hate anybody. I'm concerned about this. People write me all the time and say, look, I take these meds, or my mother-in-law takes meds, and she hasn't killed anybody. Yes, but I own firearms, and where I live in Oregon, like, everybody owns firearms, and I don't even know anybody who's killed anybody. That doesn't prove that firearms are not used to kill people. It's infantile thinking. It's emotional, infantile thinking to say that, well, I take these meds and I haven't killed anybody, so therefore your reasoning is wrong. No, the fact is that with certain people, and this is just simply not an opinion, this is a fact, certain people living on the edge of insanity already, they're just barely holding on, taking these meds can and does push them over the edge. And I just like to say that Dr. David Healy, who is he's a psychopharmacologist in Britain. He's helped me many times with some of these stories. I emailed him this morning about something. he is a acknowledged world expert on the effects of these drugs. And he does not say ban them all and everything.
Okay, just hold it. We have to take a quick break, but I want you to take us back to the doctor when we get back from this break. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio Program Doctor with David Kapelian. And you, do stay tuned, right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with David Kapelian. He, the managing editor. How do you manage something like WorldNet Daily? That must be fun. Also, he is the author of The Snapping of the American Mind. And today we're talking about minds that have snapped, school shooters. What causes it? Speculation, looking at some of the meds they've been taking over the years. It seems like all of the school shooters have two things in common, three things in common. They had guns, they have a history of psychotropic medication, and they have homicidal ideation. My goodness. David, take us away. Take us to your doctor in England there.
Well, I was just trying to go to, because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical person. I'm a journalist. I talk to doctors. I interview doctors. I cite medical studies. But I'm a journalist. But when you go to the source, Dr. David Healy, anybody can Google him. He is unimpeachable world expert on these psychotropic medications. And he had an interesting involvement in the case of James Holmes, who was the Aurora movie theater mass murderer. Remember the Batman?
Right.
The horrible. He came in and he shot up a movie theater and killed a whole bunch of people. So he is currently in prison for like a trillion years. But Dr. Healy was brought in as an expert on this case. And he was not talking in wild generalities, saying, oh, there's a black box warning label, and so these... You know, this is probably what caused him to kill these people. He was an expert witness, and he went and he studied in detail James Holmes, what he was going on to, the psychiatrist he was seeing, the exact medication, the exact dosage, and how that fit into his mental disintegration that was going on. And I'll summarize it for you. This is a quote. Dr. Healy said, quote, "These killings would never have happened had it not been for the medication James Holmes had been prescribed," unquote. That was a true specific expert opinion. This is not to say that everybody that kills people and was taking antidepressants, that was the reason. He's talking specifically in this case. But he also writes in general that there is a larger danger because of the... You have to understand what these drugs do and how they work. And there is a certain disassociation that happens. A very common thing that people say is, well, it takes the edge off my emotions, the highs, the lows. I can't really cry and get upset about things, but I'm not really super happy and joyful either. That is a near universal description that I have heard literally for decades from people taking these drugs. And the problem
is
that...
incidentally, that's the same thing that opioid users say as well. I have no feeling.
Yes. And the problem is, I started to get clued into this decades ago when I talked to a good friend, a Christian woman, who was taking Valium. Not an antidepressant, you know, just at that time Valium was the most prescribed drug in the country. We're talking about in the 70s, okay? And she said, "David, you know what it did to me? It took away my conscience." Now,
ooh,
that really, that's one of those things that you log away in your mind that said, wow, is that really true? Now, I'm not here. I'm not saying that everybody who takes Valium, it takes away your conscience, okay? It's a little more complicated than that. But these drugs, if I can just say, God made us. He made us for a purpose. And he gave us all this equipment, hands and feet and all the rest of it, okay, and heart and lungs. Our brain is supposed to work a certain way. If we go and drug it, we are taking a risk. We may like certain effects, just like people that get drunk. They feel better, and then they get in the car and they run over your daughter. Okay, well, that was an unintended consequence. You know what? They didn't mean to kill anybody. They really didn't, but they did. So there is a downside to taking all sorts of drugs.
But isn't that something that the perpetrators often say when questioned by somebody after the event, after shooting up a school? They say, I had no control.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Michael, in the article that we're talking about, the media ignoring one crucial factor in Florida school shooting, I just say it so people can Google it again, I list various examples, and some of them, a couple of them, were exactly that. There was one, Kurt Danish, who was 18 on Prozac, killed a bunch of people, and here's what he said, quote, "I didn't realize I did it till after it was done. This might sound weird, but it felt like I had no control of what I was doing, like I was left there just holding a gun." And there was one other example, Chris Pittman, 12-year-old boy, who is horrible. He murdered both of his grandparents in their sleep with a shotgun and then burned their house down. And he later had, it was like he blanked out. He said, "I was lying in my bed that night. I couldn't sleep because my voice in my head kept echoing through my mind telling me to kill them." And I won't read the whole thing, but he basically says through the whole thing, it was like watching a TV show. You know what's going to happen. You can't do anything to stop it. And his lawyers argued in court that involuntary intoxication, because his doctors had just put him on Paxil and Zoloft just prior to the murders. And I just want your listeners to know that when these people say, I didn't even know what I was doing, this is not just idle excuse making. Like, I didn't do it. I didn't. This is quite universal. This is very, very common that afterwards, they're already in prison. It's over. They're not trying to convince a judge anymore or anything. They're just trying to sort out their life and where do we go forward. And they're saying, I didn't have control. Something took over in me. And so we're dealing, I have to say, at some point in this interview, we're dealing with spiritual forces. A lot of people have a voice talking to them and telling them not necessarily to kill somebody. But,
okay, hold that. Yeah, we got to take our last break. When we get back, I'd love to talk the spiritual aspects.
Right.
Do stay tuned. Michael Lewis, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here. We're talking about school shootings. We're talking about the medications. We're talking about the guns. And we're talking with David Kopelian, managing editor of WorldNet Daily, author of The Snapping of the American Mind. And how do we get control back when it's lost to the extent that it has become lost, David?
Good question. I just to pick up on something, we just stopped midstream before your break. All of these murderers hear voices. The Florida shooter said demons instructed him how to do it. James Holmes, Andrea Yates, I mean, I've read the court transcripts. Her psychiatrist said for years she was hearing voices. Satan talking to her, saying, "You need to kill your children. It's the only way to save them." You know, horrible, delusional, evil thoughts that somehow justified in her mind drowning her five children. However, anybody listening to us right now who's honest and at all introspective and reflective can probably identify that on some level, most of us hear some sort of voices. And I'm not talking about telling you to kill people and go kill that baby, you're kind of horrible, horrible things, okay? But it's very common to have, you know, it's kind of like we're a receiver, you know, like a TV receiver or something, and we may be just picking up a channel that we shouldn't be listening to. And it's very common. People who are just mentally ill, not homicidal, not suicidal, dangerous, but they're depressed. They hear voices telling them, "You're no good. God doesn't love you. Jesus doesn't love you. You're not good enough." It's blaming everybody around you, wanting to, you know, how can you commit suicide without something telling you this is a good idea? That's like prima facie case for something dark talking to you, talking to your mind, saying it's better this way. The world's better off without you. You'll be better off. It's not true. It's horrible. In fact, there are many cases of people who jumped off a bridge to commit suicide, and they didn't end up dying. But the instant they left the bridge, the instant they left, they immediately regretted what they did. It was an impulse they listened to. So it's not something we want to listen to. You know, all I can say is that I'm not an evangelist, okay? But there is a God. Billy Graham died yesterday. He was a great guy. And this is what he always said. He says, you know, God loves you, okay? There is, even if it's hidden from us, there is a wonderful path forward for us. You know, I'm a Christian. I believe it has to do with the cross of Christ. And I believe that repentance and forgiveness is, aside from sounding religious, is tremendously good psychology. Because if you look at yourself and repent of your own faults, the hurts you've done to other people, it's very easy to forgive other people. You say, crap, they're no different from me. They're doing the same thing I did. How can I hold a grudge against that person? And if you're not hating other people and you accept God's forgiveness, I believe, and I can tell you personally from personal family experience, it goes a long way to solving a lot of, quote, mental health problems, many of which are actually spiritual, psychological, mental problems and don't really need drugs.
David, let me ask you this. What's the alternative?
The alternative to facing yourself? The alternative, yes, that's right. It's one bad thing or another. It's going back to our beginning. It's drugs. Because life becomes intolerable, and you have to deaden the pain.
David Capellian, managing editor of WorldNet Daily and author of The Snapping of the American Mind. Thank you so much. Gosh, I got to talk to you for a whole long time. Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Michael. Bye-bye. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.